and welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't pitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
And welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Philip.
Oh my God, Philip. We've got so much to cover, but I wanted to start off with a funny little story. Has nothing to do with politics, but I wonder, I'll start off with a question because it's for context. Do you rewatch old shows? I believe they call that binge watching.
Now, I don't know if you'd call the show old because it's still on the air, but I absolutely do that with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I'm doing it right now with the current obsession with Doctor Who. It's almost as if you asked this question so that I could splurge and be very excited to talk about my Doctor Who obsession. Matthew, did you open this door for me to talk about my Doctor Who obsession?
No, but I have a point coming. There's a show that I'm waiting for the fourth season to come out. Of course, I'm talking about, I don't know if you've watched it before. It's called The Outer Banks or Outer Banks or whatever.
Yeah, I kind of thought you were going to talk about The Boys because that's also got a fourth season coming soon.
Oh, no, no. So Outer Banks has three seasons. It's on Netflix. I'm waiting for the fourth season. I'm led to believe there is a fourth season coming. I hate that, man. The shows that you love, you literally have to wait a year for the next show. And it just bugs me. Anyway, so I started rewatching from the beginning. And there's a small clip. Of course, we can't play any of this shit because of copyright. But there's a small clip in the first season where they're about to like get the gold, the 400 million in gold. And they're all sitting in the van and they're like, oh, you know, thank you. You know, I love you, blah, blah, blah. And then the one character off to the side goes, okay, are we done with the circle jerk now? And I just fucking, I cracked up on that. And both my younger kids are like, what are you laughing at? Because they didn't understand, right?
Well, that's right. These jokes aren't written for the youngins. It would be very, you know how you hear about, in children's shows, they'll write some jokes they throw in that's, you know, specifically for the parents watching.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be very interesting to hear Dora the Explorer talk about a circle jerk. But, you know, that wouldn't be that's a little bit on the tightrope of appropriate.
So before we get started, I wanted to give you a moment to opine about the loss that you suffered. It's been a while since we recorded your Dragon Ball guy.
Oh.
But you didn't know where okay. I was going with that.
Akira Toriyama. Oh man, if I nailed his name in one go, I'd be so proud of myself. He's a very, very cool dude. You know, Dragon Ball is a worldwide phenomenon. I'm not that big of an anime guy.
I'm sorry. I thought I've heard you talk about Dragon Ball Z before. I've not seen one minute.
Almost
of
definitely.
It,
so. Yeah. And listen, I say we all, clearly that's an exaggeration, as you've just said that you've not watched Dragon Ball. So it'd be a lie for me to just now present it as, well, you've never watched Dragon Ball, but we've all wished to be a Super Saiyan. Now, of course, I've actually got the hair to go Super Saiyan. So that's, you know, that's more on my abilities.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, when a legend, is that the right word? I don't know.
I would absolutely say the man was a legend, you know? Like, the weird thing is that Dragon Ball has touched so many cultures and has affected people in so many ways. Like, I believe there's, like, it's a huge thing in, like, Latin America. Even Mexico has a lot of these, like, themed restaurants, I think, that are Dragon Ball based. They love the shit out of Goku. You know, he's an inspiration. So of course, you know, let us all raise our arms up and gather that energy for the spirit bomb and send it out for Akira Toriyama. So whoever's listening and is just like, oh, he's nailing these Dragon Ball references. That's like the extent of it, okay? Like, I mean, I did
listen,
watch the show.
As I told you,
I know who Majin Buu is, you know, it's fine.
As I told you when I was a kid, man, I watched the first season of the Power Rangers. And other than that, I was religious with that X-Men cartoon, which apparently I guess they're redoing or whatever.
Yeah. X-Men 97.
And also Batman, the animated series, which is the only Batman I would watch.
I mean, it's a great show.
And I used to watch, don't laugh at me, but I used to watch He-Man and She-Ra. And I don't know why. I couldn't tell you one thing except their names were He-Man or She-Ra. I don't remember any of it, but I know I watched it.
He-Man and is it He-Man and the Masters of the Universe? Is that
yeah,
He-Man?
Something like that. Yeah,
I got it. It's that and like the 80s Transformers. You know, that's that block of cartoons.
So let's see where we're gonna get started here. I'm just pulling it up.
I'm so impressed that you brought up Akira Toriyama. I should look up his name to make sure I'm like saying the right guy. Akira Toriyama. Oh, I killed it.
Yeah, you got it.
I knew the name of that man, so that means I was a dedicated fan.
Absolutely.
The Dragon Ball guy.
The Dragon Ball guy, exactly.
My guy, who are you talking about? And yeah, you know, I guess of the two of us, again, I do conceptually love the spirit bomb.
Okay, well, I was gonna start with something, but I can't seem to find it now. Oh, here it is. So there's a tweet going around. This has to do with employment law. I don't know if you've heard of the BMO employee tweet.
I don't think I know about this.
Okay, so this was on Twitter. Again, you're having a really bad influence on me.
Oh, I better. Well, no, I shouldn't. I mean, we should all be escaping from this hell site, but it's also the only place that I have like any form of influence.
This was a tweet from someone named my iPad just went out. Fuck.
I'm laughing at the ridiculous of it, not at
okay.
You. I'm laughing with you.
So there's a tweet from a guy named Veg Cravings 555. VEG CRAVINGS 555. He or she writes, people here shitting about India, but they don't know Canadian economy has moved to 15th spot in terms of GDP, and Indian economy is becoming the largest growing economy in the world. You people keep crying about that day is not far away when you people will be our servants. So somebody quote tweeted it, and whatever you think about his or her views, I think it's a girl account because the name of the account is Justice Queen. You familiar with that person?
Oh, yeah.
So they write, hello at BMO. Why is your employee posting this? I have verified that he is employed by your organization. Why does he want Canadians to be his servants? Please send me a DM for further info and I will provide it. His remarks are not very inclusionary. And then BMO responded, hi there. And this is all on Twitter. Hi there. Thank you for reaching out to us for bringing this activity to our attention. We would like to review this further. Please send us a DM so that we can continue this conversation together. And it's signed the initials VK. And in response, there's one tweet I want to read before I get your thoughts, and then we'll move on. So this is written by a person named In Yeg, Y-E-G, or whatever. And they write, I, as a longtime customer, 35 years of your institution, would not like to see this dealt with, or sorry, would like to see this dealt with publicly. No DMs, no hiding the truth. Show your customers where you stand. I find it quite disturbing what he wrote and want to know what you're going to do about it. Your thoughts? Or are you just, are you, is it deleted now? Because you're probably looking for it now.
I am on a Twitter page. Yeah, I'm scrolling through. I'm like, do you know what day it was?
Let me see. I saved this on March 11th at 9/11.
Oh, you know what? She's much like me. She's a very active Twitter user. So it's like I'm scrolling through. I'm still at March 14th. So I'll just... You're good. We're good on that. It's a very strange comment to make because it feels like it's very, the initial comment sounds like it's very, I want to say Indian nationalist, where it's more like it's just them rooting for like the Indian government. Not that there's anything wrong with being a nationalist, but obviously, okay, that's not what I want to say. That is absolutely not what I want to say. You know, there's rooting for your country and then rooting for your country in the name of hoping for another. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I find nationalism so weird. Like, what? I don't know. You know what? You've brought on to me a very interesting position. Although, as an aside, not that I want to talk too deeply about it, did you happen to see the Fifth Estate video about the whole thing that of Najjar? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is my microphone working?
I can hear you.
Okay, because it's saying I'm having some issues. All right, so if you don't hear me, just fucking interrupt me and stuff. Sorry, you were saying?
I was just asking if you'd seen the did you see the CBC Fifth Estate story about the plot to kill the Sikh activists?
No.
So that came out 9 days ago. It's very good. I watched it. It's 40 minutes long. I will send it to you when you have some time. I think you should watch it. It's a very interesting video.
Absolutely. I would love to see that. It's not one of those conspiracy theorist ones, is there? Is it?
No, it's by the CBC.
Oh, well.
That's as far away from... Well, yeah. All right. Well.
Anyway, but let's...
You know what I mean. It's...
Let's move on to one of, one of your favorite things to do. Let's talk about Doug Ford.
Oh, good. You know what's funny? The itinerary that I had told you about previously... I was thinking, I don't have anything provincially, so remind me, because I don't like that man. So I'm very happy to rag against him.
So I'm going to play a video first, and then there's an article by The Star. See, I can branch out. Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can get this done right.
I can't believe the federal government is actually going to hike the gas tax by 23%. Like, what don't you get? I've told them over and over again, the number one issue with people is affordability, affordable homes, affordable groceries, and affordable gas. And what drives up the inflation is energy cost. When you're gouging people at the pumps, they're already taking, 17.5 cents compared to where we reduced it by 10.7 cents. Guys, wake up, smell the coffee. Like, what don't you understand? Cancel this carbon tax, put it on hold, do whatever. And if you don't, the people of Canada are going to annihilate you when the election comes up. Simple as that.
Your thoughts on the video before I go to the article, which is kind of the, I don't know if you want me to read the article. It's kind of the same. Just so it's written by The Star. So it's approved by Philip.
That's not necessarily true. I just trust The Star more than I trust, say, the Toronto Sun.
Because they don't employ Brian Lilly.
That is very true. That is fact.
This article is written by a guy named Robert Benzie, and it has the headline, Ford turns up heat over carbon tax. Interrupt me if you have a comment. Premier urges feds in public and in private to halt increase. Yes, Premier Doug Ford is appealing. That part got cut off, sorry. Warning the Liberals risk being annihilated. I do not understand for the life of me what the federal government is thinking, the progressive conservative premier told reporters Wednesday in Pickering. If they don't start putting money back in people's pockets instead of filling their pockets, guess what? They're going to get annihilated, he said, of an election expected next year. They're done. Done like dinner. Behind the scenes, sources say Ford, who speaks frequently with Trudeau, Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland, and Intergovernmental Affairs Minister Dominic LeBlanc, has been giving the Liberals similarly pointed advice. He repeated that counsel publicly in Pickering. The number one issue in every single poll, doesn't matter what party, who does it, is affordability, affordable gas, affordable homes, and affordable groceries, said the premier, an avid student of political polling who pores over research findings. Ford's opposition to carbon pricing for consumers is a rare point of policy agreement with federal conservative leader Pierre Poilievre. On Sunday, Poilievre held an Axe the Tax rally in the premier's North Etobicoke North riding, a mere 5 kilometers from his home, attracting some 2,500 people. Where the fuck was this? Because I didn't know about it. I wasn't there.
I frozen. You know what's funny, Matt? I did know about it. I 100% knew about it. There was a part of me that was tempted to go. But I mean, 100%, that's me because I want to confront Melissa Lansman for being a political coward. But there's no way I was going to get close enough to her to be able to let her know how I feel. But yeah, I mean, I was aware of it.
Well, I wasn't. Anyway.
Ooh, we could have gotten a municipal's message to Pierre Poilievre.
I'm just trying to get to the next thing. If you have anything you wanted to add, go ahead. While I'm just scrolling through my notes.
I think my ultimate thought about talking about the carbon tax is there's so many levels of talking about it where I kind of feel like the bottom line really is, I mean, the problem is there are a few bottom lines, which sounds ridiculous that I say it like that, but there's, you know, people who are fundamentally opposed to taxation. So that's one level. And I understand where those people are coming from. I fundamentally disagree with them because, of course, taxes pay for social services and things we need. So, you know, on a anti-tax position, I understand them. But there's a lot of people pretending that they don't understand, for example, how the rebates work. They're like, how can lower income people get back more money than they're putting in? That doesn't make sense. The Liberals are talking out of their assholes. And of course, the ones who are, I want to say, a little bit more on top of it, but are still trying to make it out to be a bad thing, are like, oh, this is a wealth redistribution scheme. And on its face, it essentially is. But, you know, I think the problem being that I wouldn't frame that as a bad thing. You know what I mean? But
I think you mean pyramid scheme.
No.
Well, that's what I think it is.
Because the thing is, those who are paying more, the ones who are paying more are paying more because they're polluting more. And so they don't, it's income-based.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit.
Okay.
How are they paying more?
What do you mean?
So you said those who pollute more pay more. Can you give me examples of polluting? Because everybody goes.
In this case,
everybody goes to the grocery store. Right. Everybody buys groceries.
Right.
The majority of the population, I'm comfortable saying that, drive cars.
Right.
So the majority of the population buy the same gas.
Right.
So here's my problem.
Yes.
We don't have a universal definition of what it means to be lower income.
Right.
I would put myself in that same category, but the federal government wouldn't. I don't qualify for anything. But I'm struggling just like everybody else. See what I'm saying?
Well, so here's what I'm saying in terms of they pay more. I just mean, like, if you're running a business, I'm not talking about an individual, you know, more. It's like the businesses, when they have things shipped,
right?
You know, they're. I think the conversation gets muddied up because people think they're talking about individuals versus industry. Industry is paying more. And I mean that in the sense that they're using more, so they're paying more. I don't mean that they get a higher tax percentage, but they're using more. So by definition, they're paying more of the tax. You know what I mean?
I understand that part of it. But in terms of like redistributing the wealth, it's kind of fucked up. That's the word I would use. I think it's a good time for a Coke. You're right.
Yeah. This episode brought to you by competing products. I am drinking Pepsi's own Dr. Pepper. I think it's a Pepsi brand product now.
It always has been.
Shut up.
I was told that's a root beer. That's not root beer.
No, I think it's probably a conversation because it's clearly a cola and it's got like a sweet kind of funkiness to it.
I've never tasted it. Is that weird?
You've never had Dr. Pepper?
Never, not once.
This man needs a dose of the doctor. I'm stating that as fact.
Okay.
So here's my question, just based on what you said. Is your issue with the concept of wealth distribution, or do you think that this isn't doing that?
It's not doing it.
Okay. And I think that's a better criticism, only because I'll hear people kind of commentate on Twitter and they'll say something crazy along the lines of, I think I've already made this point on the show before, but you know, they're like, oh, anyone else sick of getting taxed 50% of their income? And it's like, you got to be making a hell of a lot of money for that to be your like tax level. So all of a sudden, when I hear people, you know, kind of boost for Pierre Poilievre, all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, that makes a lot more sense. if that level of tax is hurting you, because all I know is if Pierre Poilievre cut my personal income taxes, it would not make a whole hell of a lot of difference in my life.
You know, I would tend to agree with you. Maybe my former job, I wouldn't agree with you. They were really, really taking the tax. But I would probably agree with you now. But again, at the end of the day, I don't qualify for anything. The climate thing, nothing.
Qualify for the rebates.
Nope. I haven't gotten a climate thing in 2 years. I haven't gotten a GST in, I think it's at least 5 years.
I think there's got to be something going
on. I don't get the trip. I do my own taxes.
No. I think you should not be not getting those things. I think there's something wrong here. And I'm wondering if this goes beyond, because like Matt, you cannot be making enough that you are not getting the GST and not getting those rebates.
To our listeners, if you guys are reach out.
We need a tax guy to help Matt out because
I think he's getting
screwed. You know, his whole position here could just be on the fact that for some reason he's not getting what he's entitled to.
What the fuck?
Could you fucking imagine?
It's time for me to get mine.
Holy shit. Like, again, ultimately, it's the, again, what I do truly feel like it's hard to argue the carbon tax And it's fundamentally, people will agree or disagree on, do we think taxes are good or bad things? And I know on an individual level, paying more for anything sucks. And I'm just saying, you can be for or against, and I don't think it significantly makes you, I feel like I'm very strong on my positions, you know what I mean? Where it really does feel like there's a correct side and an incorrect side. I understand where people are coming from when they're anti-taxation. I just disagree with them.
Well, let's end this little thing with, I'm going to ask you a question. You say that, well, not you, but it has been said that the purpose of the carbon tax is to curb usage, to...
Yes.
Has it done that? Or are we using the same? Or are we using more because the population has grown, because Justin Trudeau has decided to open the floodgates and let any and all refugees in? Not that that's a bad thing. If we've got the space and stuff, and their country, for whatever reason, they can't stay there anymore, whether it's violent or whatever, and they want to come here, that's great. But is it working? Because before I let you, I'm just going to say, I tend to think that the purpose of it's not working. We're either using the same or we're using more. Your thoughts?
I think that's an absolutely 100% fair criticism. Sorry, my phone just started getting a phone call. It claims it's from Beijing, so I'm going to guess it's a spam call or something. So I'm just going to...
You know, on other podcasts, when they get crank calls and shit, they answer them and say...
Oh, that's... You know what? Oh, what a wasted opportunity. That's all right.
Sorry, your thoughts.
Yeah. So... There's a video posted by he was a candidate for Ontario Liberal leader. He is currently a federal MP for the Liberals, Nate Erskine Smith. He posted this clip of a conversation he was having with like this radio personality about the carbon tax, kind of defending it, talking about its uses. And what I think, Matthew, is I think there's a fair criticism to be made of people who believe, who understand what it's intended for and believe it's fundamentally missing the mark. And I think you're right. Because my understanding is that emissions aren't on a grand scale going down all that much. Now, what I had responded to his video with was, and I feel like a lot of liberals are missing. When I tell you that there are people who are just opposed to taxation, I feel like liberals are missing the mark where they're not getting that across. And so the thing that I had said was, what people are saying about the carbon tax, this is to your question of, are we changing our behaviors? And my understanding is that people don't want to change their behaviors. They want to keep doing what they're doing. Outside forces be damned. And of course, then that comes into a conversation about climate change. And if you even believe that climate change is real, that's why these conversations are so interconnected, and they're so hard to untangle, because there's so many steps. So for me, for example, I you know, people talk about climate change. I believe them. So I feel like the importance of the carbon tax makes sense. Say someone doesn't believe in climate change, and I'm not, I say they're wrong. I disagree with them. I'm not, in this moment, I'm not demonizing them. I'm just saying, from the position of someone who doesn't believe that climate change is a real thing, what is the carbon tax but just a cash grab?
Exactly.
And so it's like, how do you, but we can't, we can't make policy based on people because they don't believe in something.
You know, I just thought about this, and I'm aware of our time. So we'll spend the rest of the time talking about this, because I just thought, this just thought just came to my head. Here, let me hit you with this. So first of all, I believe it's a cash grab. Whether or not I believe in carbon or climate change, I'm back and forth. I've seen for, I've seen against. I'm on the fence. As a true, what do you call it? Centrist. Maybe I was
as
right.
A true liberal.
I know.
My I thought that is, you.
My thought is if all politicians, federal, provincial, municipal, if they're gave a shit about the present as much as I see them give a shit about the future, because climate change, all that shit's in the future. You and I are going to be long gone before climate change or anything else really affects anything in this world. It's my belief. If it's real, we're going to be long gone. So we're not going to, it's not going to be, what am I trying to say? It's not going to be something that we experience, is what I'm trying to say. So if they can do all these grand plans, make all these plans for 10, 20, 30 years in the future, why can't they give a shit about the struggles that the average Canadian is experiencing today? Homelessness, not being able to. I've seen so many videos. I don't know if, You really, you really got a bad influence on me. So now there's videos.
I'm so happy to hear that.
There's videos going around. I'm sure you've seen them, where there's like a camera filming like a family or like a single mother with a child, and she's in the grocery store and she can't afford shit. So she's putting shit back. And at the end of the video, they go around and they buy everything that she put back, or the father, whatever. That is a thing that's happening. I'm glad that it's happening, that the person's not going without. If in fact that is a real video, that's great. But my point is, it shouldn't be happening in the first place. When you have to choose between heat or food and a roof over your head, those are choices one should never have to make. I don't know if I told you, I'll shut up in a minute. I don't know if I ever told you this story. And this is no disrespect to my mother. I love my mother. God rest her soul.
But eat shit, mom.
I was a nosy little fucker when I was a kid, right? I would always hide behind the corner listening to my mom's phone conversations. And often I would hear her say the words to whomever she's talking to. You know, blank, I don't know how we're going to get through the month. There's not enough food in the fridge. Or blank, I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford rent because I've got this to pay and that to pay. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm struggling. What should I do? And I went to bed and I would get worried. I would get worried about the roof over my head, because as a kid, you're never supposed to worry about that stuff. That's adult stuff to worry about. And and I think I'll end it there, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on all my ramblings, and I'll shut up now and you can have the final 3 minutes.
You know, it's, I know this isn't what we're talking about, and as you know, I'm just a very anti-conservative, but it's like, I think this is the stuff that really kind of upsets me when people, I want to say commentators, act as if poverty in this country is this brand new thing, that it was unheard of before Justin Trudeau entered the picture of Canada. And it's like, that's fundamentally not true.
Poverty, so you're clear, that's not what I'm saying either.
You're talking about you as a kid. So I'm just throwing it to the idea that people seem to think that it's like poverty is this brand new thing that's never been seen in this country before. And I just think that it's hard to tell if there's an element of, it feels like there's people taking advantage of the feelings of financial desperation to say, oh, that's on the federal government. God, I don't want to do this rant, because it sounds like it's me defending Justin Trudeau. I'm not. The federal government sucks. There's not much, but I think the main point I want to get to everything you've been talking about in terms of politicians not doing things to help things now. And I feel like the answer is moral and political cowardice. Their focus is on getting elected the next term. It's not on the immediate needs of their constituents. And I can see why action on climate change feels offensive in the face of we're suffering now. And politicians, they don't want to legislate, for example, lower grocery prices, because that's a hand on the market or whatever. We can't, that's a bad. We can't be hurting the market in that way. But I feel like it's capitulation to fuck. I'm getting to my very hippie phase very quick before we have to go. God, sorry, this is gonna be the most hippie thing I say, but it's capitulation to capitalism. That's the problem.
And we'll continue this on the other side. And we're back. And before we jump off the topic, I know we're talking about the carbon tax and stuff. I bought the Sun, the Toronto Sun for today. And there's an article in. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but don't rest assured, it's not a Brian Lilly article.
Thank God.
It's a Lori Goldstein.
Damn it.
It's an opinion piece as well. Okay.
That son of a bitch.
The headline reads, "Can't give up the fight. Trudeau insists he isn't going anywhere." Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he has a quote, crazy job, and he thinks about quitting all the time, but quote, "I couldn't be the man I am and give up the fight at this point." In a response to a listener's question during an interview on the Radio Canada show ICI Premiere on Friday, Trudeau said in French, and this is a direct quote, "I think about quitting every day. It's a crazy job that I'm doing, sacrifices on a personal level. If I didn't doubt what I do almost every day, I wouldn't be human." He describes the job of being Canada's prime minister as, quote, super tough and, quote, challenging. But as for quitting, Trudeau says, no way. He says, quote, "I couldn't be the man I am and give up the fight at this point. The choice that Canadians will make in a year in the election will be so fundamental." Trudeau declaring yet again that while times are tough for him as well as Canadians, he's not going to quit is by no means, he's not going to quit is by no means definitive. And that's all I'll read about that article. So we got our answer. It's going to be Trudeau versus Poilievre, not fill in the blank versus Poilievre. So I'm going to say it right now. The carbon tax is going up April 1st, 23%. I don't know how much it's going to go up next April 1st. I'm telling you, like the Doug, listen, I know how you feel about Doug Ford, and I don't agree with him on quite a bit as well. But he's right about this. The Liberal government is going to be not only defeated would be one thing, going to be obliterated. It really truly gives you Kathleen Wynne vibes. Your
I think that's
thoughts.
fair. Oh no, that's what's interesting is I'm excited that you brought up that interview because that's one of my it's one of my itinerary elements, but not for the reason that you brought it up. Because in I think it was a British publication, I think. I don't think it was the BBC, but when they had first posted the interview, they had translated one part of that, the part where it talks about the job being like tough and challenging. They had translated Trudeau as to saying that it was boring. So the thing that was so interesting this weekend was to have so many people on the one hand go like, Justin Trudeau thinks it's boring. Ugh. And then you'd have, for example, Supriya, I forgot her last name, but she is officially working with the PMO. So, I mean, people attacked her because they saw it as like defending Trudeau on that front. But she was saying that the translation, and a few other people were saying that the translation makes more sense for it to say, like, it's a tough job. And then, of course, then the backlash to that backlash, which is people going, why are you guys spending so much time defending Trudeau when the main message here is that he said he wants to quit every day? And I agree with that. To be honest, you know, Matthew, you've been, you were predicting a walk in the snow on February 29th. I had no inclination that he had any interest in quitting in any way, shape, or form. Him saying out loud that he thinks about quitting every day, that to me is like, oh, shit, this dude's going to quit. Like, one of these days, the answer isn't going to be no. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And moving along, unless there's anything else you wanted to cover on that interview.
Not particularly.
It leads people to do things they would have never thought to do. So I don't have the tweet in front of me, but I have some subtweets or comments, responses on the, whatever.
I think those are just replies.
Former municipal guest and former mayoral candidate, Isabella Ganth, tweeted, again, I don't have it in front of me, something about having to panhandle recently. Nobody should ever have to do that. I did it when I was a teenager, but I didn't do it because I needed to do it.
Is she on Twitter?
Yes.
Still? Oh, yes. You know, I've been thinking, I haven't seen anything from her or in a Facebook. While.
No, I think maybe. This is Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, and the only reason I make a distinction is because I hadn't seen anything from her in quite a while. So, I wonder if she's just giving up the Twitter game.
I wanted to read a couple of, I think she got maybe banned. I'm not sure. I wanted to read a couple of comments to her, what she wrote. One is by a guy named Harvey Keach, and he says, ODSB should give us a livable income. I'm still homeless because of the low amount ODSB gives me. Disability should not equal deep poverty. And the reason I brought this up was this next comment. I'd love to get your thoughts on this because you're the left guy, and this is a strike at the left side of the government.
Oh, shit.
So a woman named Nicole Borthwick writes, in BC, it's worse. You need an address, otherwise you're fucked. They also arrest you if you panhandle without a city permit. It's an NDP government. The whole system is fucked. Your comments.
Do you want to know why? To be honest, I'm not going to take that at face value because it's some random person. It could just be someone talking. I'm not going to pretend that what they're saying is the truth. You know what
okay,
I mean?
But it is an NDP provincial government in BC, correct?
Yeah.
I know. We gotta try to check things out and legitimize this. I just think it was funny, so I thought I would bring this up to you. And now,
like, it's not fair for me to say that that's absolutely not the case. I feel like there's too much commentary going from people who are just saying shit.
And now we go to another province. We go to Manitoba, where Premier Wab Kanu, your guy, your boy.
That is true. I do like my boy Kanu quite a bit.
He posted something I think you'll love. And he is as well. It's an NDP. Just before I read it. So BC's NDP, Alberta is conservative?
Conservative. Yeah, yeah.
Saskatchewan is
conservative.
Conservative.
Now, because it's different because the provincial parties, for the most part, the Liberals are named the Liberals, the NDP are named the NDP, But the conservatives have different names throughout. So in Alberta, they're the UCP, the United Conservative Party.
But it's the same shit.
In Saskatchewan, it's the Saskatchewan Party.
But they're conservative. It's the same shit.
Oh, yeah. It's no question.
And so in Manitoba is NDP now. Ontario, obviously, is conservative. Quebec is, I think is it Bloc Québécois or liberal?
It's, what is, it's François Legault.
That's your guy. No. Your guy's the federal Bloc Québécois.
Yeah, my guy is a federal guy. He's fun. He just,
You should try to write him an email and see if we can get a response.
I should try to write him to convince him to run a slate all across the country for Bloc Québécois. I will be his Scarborough Southwest MP candidate for the Bloc Québécois. I swear to God. Okay. So
what if that means you have to learn French?
I'll learn French for that, man. I don't see why not. Okay. So François Legault, that's not the name of the party now. Oh, Coalition Avenir Quebec. Oh, the CAQ. I have no idea what their deal is. So I don't think I could do a conservative liberal NDP comparison. I have no idea what Quebec does.
Okay.
And I think most Canadians say that as well.
And I think New Brunswick and Newfoundland, if I'm correct, are both liberal. I'm just not sure.
Newfoundland is liberal. New Brunswick and Nova Scotia and PEI, I think, are all conservative.
Are you sure? I thought New Brunswick was liberal.
Oh, New Brunswick, that's Premier Higgs. That's 100% conservative.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. We got off on a... So there's a tweet that Wab Canoe, I love that name, wrote, and he writes, Manitoba has posted the lowest unemployment rate among the provinces since November 2023. Your thoughts?
Wait, what?
I said, Manitoba has posted the lowest unemployment rates among the provinces since November 2023. Your thoughts?
Oh, that's oddly specific.
Well, I think that's when he got in, right?
No. But I was going to say, because I feel like it's... Here's the thing.
I'm giving you I'm giving you the layup to dunk it and talk about your boy.
It's so funny because I think your assumption is that I'm gonna praise the man, but I think I've got to give you a moment of some realism. It's too soon in his premiership for anything he could be doing to have any effect. You know what I mean?
Well, I know that, but...
Oh, okay. And I... Governance is hard because people will use the ignorance of how government works and timelines. They'll weaponize it. And so it's interesting in this case. I don't believe that there's enough time for this NDP government to have done enough to have affected the unemployment rate. So that would be, in my mind, a credit to the PC party of Manitoba.
Would you say, and I'm not slinging mud, but would you class this as maybe, I don't know if it's the right word, but I'm going to go with misinformation.
Political misinformation?
I know it's hard. He's your boy and stuff, but...
It's the thing is, and I bring it up like this because this is how, in my mind, it's going to play out federally, you know? Say housing policies. I know this isn't what we're talking about. We're not even talking about federally, but I'm always dragging it back to Pierre versus Trudeau. And again, I keep saying I hate Trudeau, but I'm constantly defending him. So, you know, enjoy that schadenfreude or whatever it is called. But like, you know, say Justin Trudeau's housing policies now are actually good. For them to bear fruit, it takes time. Most of that stuff will probably spring up when Pierre Poilievre is prime minister. And he is 100% going to claim credit on that shit. You know what I mean? It's going to be like, well, this couldn't have happened without our conservative government. It's like, no, they were laying the seeds. I coming back to the NDP in Manitoba. Which is to say, it's too soon. They couldn't have done anything this fast. And I mean, maybe someone will come around and say, actually, that's why the Manitoba NDP is so good, because they accomplished it so quickly. No, we have to be skeptical of these timelines. I just, in the way that I'm like kind of future-proofing my conservative, counterpoints, I have to be consistent and say that I don't think the NDP can claim credit.
Well put.
Thank you. Sorry, so my boy. Could you be my come on the show? Be my best friend.
Let's move on to a different province. And this news broke earlier this week.
Former provincial pals it up.
Former Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi confirmed Monday he will seek leadership of Alberta's New Democrats, changing the trajectory of the race to replace Rachel Notley. Your thoughts, and then I have a video that he made that I want to play.
Ooh. My understanding is that Naheed was an incredibly popular Calgary mayor. So it makes sense. This is a very logical jump. It sounds like, here's the thing. We are not very well versed in Alberta politics. I know I like to pretend that, I know everything. David Moskrap, I don't know if you recognize that name. I believe he's like an independent journalist from Ottawa. He had made a, well, he didn't make a joke. He was stating he was looking for someone to come on the show to talk about the Alberta NDP thing, from a perspective of someone who understands Alberta. So I made a joke, being someone from Toronto who knows absolutely nothing about Alberta, I was like, yeah, I'll absolutely fucking do it. Let's go. I'm going to make it very simple. Because I don't think we have the context to really talk about it too deeply. It is going to be a struggle to overcome the UCP. Alberta is a deeply entrenched conservative province. I'm saying that as neutrally as I can. I'm not making a judgment call on that right now. I don't know how popular Naheed Nenshi is outside of Calgary.
That's a good point. And with that, let's listen to his video.
I grew up here on this street in Northeast Calgary. So good to see you again. And just outside of Red Deer. My family were small business people. We lost everything in the 1980s recession.
The nation is in its worst economic crisis in 50 years.
And we had to start again with a little laundromat. Sometimes we were poor. Sometimes we were very poor. But we struggled. We worked hard. And ultimately, we found success here in this place. And we found that success because Alberta believed in us. I graduated from great public schools, including this one. I explored the city on public transit. I hunted the public library. I learned to swim very badly in a public pool. And the public healthcare system was always there for us. These strong public services shaped me, and they helped me build a great Canadian life. That's why, after working for businesses across North America and living around the world, I chose to come home here to Alberta to make my life. I worked hard in business as a professor, and ultimately I was elected 3 times as mayor of Calgary.
And our best days are still ahead.
Serving for 11 years. During that time, Calgary was named the best city in the Western Hemisphere to live, and we kept our residential property taxes the lowest in the country. And things are so hard right now. Life is getting less and less affordable. Our utilities and insurance bills are through the roof. Too many of us don't have a family doctor. We don't know if the ER or the ambulance will be there when we need it. Our kids' classes are getting bigger and bigger. Our summers are filled with forest fire smoke, and all of us feel the impacts of floods and of droughts. What we need now is smart, credible government. We need a government that respects us. We need a government that we can trust. And sadly, we don't have it. Danielle Smith and her government are not only incompetent, They're immoral and they're dangerous. The only things they know how to do are pick fights and waste money. And while they indulge themselves and their friends, life gets harder for all of us. But it doesn't have to be that way. There is a choice, a better choice. Alberta's New Democrats are that alternative, a party based on values we all share, Alberta values. With your help, we can build on the tremendous legacy of Rachel Notley and all of those who worked hard for this party.
That we would provide health care for every man, woman, and child.
Together, we can beat Danielle Smith and the UCP. We can restore public education. We can protect and improve public health care. We can strengthen our economy and we can build prosperity. We can make life more affordable. We can safeguard our seniors and the most vulnerable. We can save lives. And we can do it together today. Please go to nenshi.ca to buy your Alberta NDP membership and let's get started. We can do this for Alberta. I'm Nahid Nenshi, and I'm running to be leader of the Alberta NDP in your next premier.
Wow.
I think that's an incredible video, to be honest. I watched a bit of it earlier, but I never listened through the whole thing. And I think it's actually incredibly smart. You know, there's a bit where he had a moment where he's talking about the low property taxes. And knowing where we are right now in Toronto, a big part of the issue is the austerity politics of John Tory. So I was immediately thinking to myself, I was like, "What? He's even so open for me to rip him a whole new thing. But I think it was smart of him to immediately jump to the provincial issues. Because as I've said so many times, so many people don't understand where the separation of powers in this country are. So I know so many people just assume everything is Justin Trudeau. I think he was smart to just point at directly what the jurisdiction is and where the failures are. I think it was a great video.
Would you like to know my thoughts?
I absolutely do.
I think that if I lived in Alberta, I would vote for him. And I don't say that lightly because, you know, you find a politician that you like and then you just sit there and you cross your fingers and you hope and you pray that they're going to, A, keep their word, and B, you're not going to find them attached to anything slimy.
You find a politician that you like and then you just let them erode their your trust in them. And then after it's eroded trust, you pick a new politician.
Like, I'll go back to the example of Rob Ford. All of his challenges, in my opinion, were all personal. Had nothing to do with the job. That's how I was able to keep supporting him, and I looked past it. Yes, I did. I looked past it. Because, again, his challenges were personal. He never fucked up as the mayor, in my opinion. He never did. I always said, and I've said this before on the show, he's the one guy I would give my wallet to at a party. Would the scenario would never take place in reality. But
I don't know. I like your reverence for Rob Ford. Like I don't view him the same way you do, but I like that you do, you know? Is that weird?
Know, no, it's listen. I'll say this, and then we'll move on. I think that if And this is the joke satire portion of the show. But I think that if Justin Trudeau got himself a drug habit, a lot of people would start feeling sorry for him and maybe start to absolve him of his stuff. Again, it's the satire portion.
I straight up thought you're just going to say people would just like him more. Period.
It's possible. You know, he is the one that brought in weed. Shouldn't he be high all the time?
You know what? I wonder if that's the disconnect between the popularity of 2015 Justin Trudeau and where we are in 2024, the country's impression on him. Because in 2015, he really was more relatable. And I loved his appearances with Rick Mercer. It's definitely this hour is 22 minutes. Oh, I forgot his name. He's a comedian, but he's in like Justin Trudeau's office, and he makes the joke about he's like, oh, you know, where can I light it up? He like pulls the joint out of his pocket, and Justin Trudeau's just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, it's 2015, Justin Trudeau really was a funny guy. And I
What
just
happened?
I mean, listen, 10 years in that job, it doesn't shock me that, you
I'll make a
know, all that
prediction.
stuff rubs
I'll
off.
make another prediction. This is not going to come true. It would be funny to me if it came true. So we have the election next year, right? Liberals lose. And the next morning, Philip goes out and gets the newspaper. Doesn't what let's say you, for fun, you got the Sun, okay? And the headline reads, "What happened?" And then it shows the picture of Trudeau losing and Pierre Poilievre winning, and the headline reads, "What happened? Question mark."
Oh, I need someone to make it's the the Virgin versus Chad meme where Justin Trudeau is the Virgin walking and Pierre Poilievre is the Chad. I'm sure conservative memesters will love the fact that I just said Pierre Poilievre would be the Chad, but
All right, now it's that time in our show where you're gonna love this next one. You ready?
I'm ready.
So we're gonna come back home now to Ontario and finish it off before we delve into other things. And there is an article by the Toronto Star, and the headline reads, and I'm not gonna read the article, it's just the headline. Former Prime Minister Kim Campbell called Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre a quote liar and hate mongerer, and suggested that she won't vote for his party in the next federal election. So this is a former conservative prime minister saying this about Pierre Poilievre. Your thoughts, and then I'll get to the filibuster thing, because I think you know what I'm about to do, but let's separate the pieces and first get your thoughts on the article.
What's fun is I don't think I have anything in mind for what you could, you know, filibuster me here. So also we should definitely find a that'd be listen, filibuster would make a great segment
Oh my God, you
for
just named it.
I know, that's
Instead
what
of
I'm
Phil's
saying. Yeah.
Corner, filibuster.
Filibuster. I do like that. Okay, yeah.
Trademark.
Nailed it. Fucking killed it. Oh, filibuster. Oh no, I like
Trademark.
that so much. Yeah, we gotta
You have to
figure
say
this out.
trademark.
If you know, if I find out that filibuster is spelled with two L's, that'll be so great because
Yes.
my name is not spelled with. Anyways, we'll figure this out. Anyways.
Well, I mean, let's flip it, because you're a lefty. So how would you feel if, like, Jean Chrétien came out and said, well, he's not going to vote for Justin Trudeau in the next election? It's the same thing. It's your political
You know what?
lines.
Actually, here's the thing. I feel like it's slightly different, and it's because the Conservative Party that Brian Mulroney was part of, that, you know, of course gave way to Kim Campbell as Prime Minister, is not the Conservative Party that we have today. Like we there's that, you know, very fun history of the Reform Party, you know, the split of the conservatives, the reforming of the party, and Stephen Harper getting to power on this newly formed Conservative Party. Conservatives are not the same party that they were in the 90s. And that's not me being like
It's
conservatives are
factual.
it's that
It's
is the
factual.
fact. Yeah. So what's so that's not I'm not even like implying anything good or bad about that. And that's the only reason I say it's different if it were Jean Chrétien saying that he wouldn't vote for Justin Trudeau because that would be worse because that is the same Liberal Party. They are the same. They're from the same party. So that would be much worse.
So you don't think this is daunting? I mean,
No, not
how much
really.
what how much water does Kim Campbell really carry in her with her opinion?
How much water does current Kim Campbell have with the current I want to say the current conservative voter base. And I would suggest not a lot.
I would tend to agree with you.
So like I understand why people would want to push this as it's like, oh, infighting with conservatives. But I
So,
Yeah, of course I agree with Kim Campbell because I think Pierre Poilievre is those things. But again, I don't think it's this, it's not this huge indictment that she differs from him.
your favorite MPP, your girl,
Oh shit.
Lisa
Which one?
McLeod.
Fuck, I hate her so much.
She quote tweeted the article. I don't
Oh
have
no.
the whole tweet, but I'll read what I do have. It says, "I respect that she became the first female prime minister of Canada and my party, but as an 18-year-old delegate, I supported Jean Charest
Yeah, he's
over her for many reasons. Prime being her lack of understanding of the party and our base. Happy to cancel her vote out when I support Pierre," and then it cut off on me. Your thoughts on her tweet?
shut up. No deeper thoughts, just shut up. I really, between
She's,
this.
I keep asking you this. She's Ottawa South.
She's, I think she's, I'm pretty sure she's Pierre's writing. I think she's Carleton.
Kanata Carlton? No.
That's, you know what?
Kanata
We're here.
Carlton was one of the by-elections that w ran last year.
Is that
Remember,
right?
we briefly covered Kanata Carlton. Maybe it's Carlton's
Nepean.
Nepean.
So that is Ottawa, but yeah, different writing.
Okay.
You know, and she's been on this weird kick of like demonizing protesters and also very cowardly being like, politicians are untouchable. Don't hurt us. Oh, I'm so scared. Like, shut up. I hate her so much. You can tell I've got nothing nice to say about her. I'm just like, just shut up. I had to mute her on Twitter because I was like, I can't see your tweets anymore. They
So that's
just
why
make me mad.
you didn't know where I was going.
That's 100. Yeah, absolutely did not see that because I have averted my gaze from. Oh, I hate her so much. She makes me so mad.
Well, going from one to another, your boy, Counselor Brad Bradford,
Stop giving me my strongest battles.
he put out a tweet, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts because there's some shit I didn't know. He writes, "To solve our housing crisis, we need innovations like modular homes. Last week, I had the chance to tour the at BECC Modular Factory in Hamilton alongside my mom, Valerie Bradford, MP."
Did you not know that?
I did not know that.
You didn't know that?
I guess I was living under a rock.
No, because his mom is a liberal MP.
How the fuck does that work? Because let's go back to the by-election for a second. Wasn't he seeking at one point Doug Ford's support? He's like, yeah, I can be your guy. I can be your
That
guy.
well, that's a. I mean, that's my big. That's honestly, Matthew. That's my big opposition to Brad Bradford when he was. And this is just my interpretation. I mean, I guess that's everything I say here. But with Brad Bradford, when he was running for city council, I can't say for 2018 because I wasn't paying attention that much in 2018. But in 2022, he was running as this like progressive kind of bike lane sort of oriented. Like he really was running as a progressive oriented guy. That was the vibe he gave off. And my understanding is that that ward. Beaches of East York is a like progressive ward, which is why when he ran for mayor under like a more conservative minded, administration, he did so poorly in his ward, like for mayor. And that's sort of where I'm at with Brad Bradford. When I see someone who acts like that, all I see is someone chasing power. I don't see someone who's genuinely interested in taking care of people.
You know, I said it before. Brad Bradford is going to say whatever Brad Bradford needs to protect and advance Brad Bradford's political career. I don't know. Maybe it's you know, we don't know anything about it. Oh, okay, I'll speak for myself. I don't know anything about his mother. I didn't even know she was an MP. But the fact that she's a liberal MP and part of Justin Trudeau's group, crew, cabinet, whatever you want to call it.
I mean, come on, she's a backbencher. She's not really part of his crew.
She votes when she votes well, that's how he tells her to vote. That's enough for me.
You know what? And that's fair enough. And I don't want to get into this like huge conversation about it, but that just, it reminds me of right now, there seems to be this push in Alberta. I don't know how like deep or how big there is from the provincial government. They want to push it, but it seems there's some like, they're starting to talk about the idea of having parties at the municipal level. And I don't like that.
That's a big mistake. You and I agree on that part.
And because what I find most offensive is it's a lot of people who are upset that Mayor Giandek, I believe is her name. She's apparently very NDP associated. And people are saying, oh, we didn't know that about her when we elected her. But your ignorance on what municipal candidates stand for is not a reason to give you less reason to look into them. The way I see parties for municipal politics is simply an excuse for people to not look at the candidates and instead to just be like, oh, there's a liberal candidate. I'm going to vote for the liberal candidate. Like I feel like it takes away people's desires to participate.
I would tend to agree with you. And we can look no further than our own municipal government and see that, you know, I'm just going to say it. I don't think Olivia Chow is going to be reelected. And I'll go one further. I don't think that an NDP leaning candidate in the future is going to get elected in her place, because in my opinion, I'll speak for myself. Toronto took a big risk electing a progressive. Progressives don't get in. They don't get in. No, for whatever reason, they don't. So, and I'm sorry, this is not a popular opinion, but in my opinion, again, I'll speak for myself, she shit the bed so far. And progressives are only going to get so many opportunities.
Well, I agree with you. I 100% agree with you, and I want to say the only, this doesn't sound fair because I consider myself progressive, so I'm going to defend progressivism. I feel like progressives will always have more of an uphill battle than the alternative, because the alternative, you know, they're saying things like, we want to give you lower taxes, and that's, you know, they say that they're not acknowledging all the things that we need taxes for. They're just like, let me give you lower taxes. And I understand why people would be like, I want to go for that.
So before we get cut off, I just wanted, because we got a busy slate the next one. Our former municipal, Robert Zukowski, I said his name this time. His tweet writes, it's unprofessional for Mary Frigidakis and the Greektown BIA to blame bike TO lanes and cafe TO patios for making Taste of the Danforth more difficult and expensive to organize. The right to travel safely on our streets is not up for debate. So Taste of the Danforth has been canceled for this year. Quick thoughts on this tweet before we go to break.
I agree with Robert, with understand that I'm coming in here with very little context. So, you know, if someone is like, you're missing the point, I don't understand. That's fine. Please tell me what I'm missing. In my mind, the only issue you'd have running any of these sort of Taste of the Blank, you know, kind of street festivals is the cars. And I mean, that's what they do. They block off the streets, you know, for these festivals to happen. So what issue at that point, what are the bike lanes doing that's making a festival harder? What are these patios doing that's going to make your street festival harder? That doesn't make any sense to me. It sounds like someone is just making up an issue making up a reason for why they can't do what they're doing.
And with that, we will see you guys on the other side. And we're back. And I guess the time has come to discuss the other crap that went on this week. And of course, I'm referring to the whole Instagram / Twitter war between Chris Sky and the other guy, which apparently I've done a little research. So I'm not sure if this restaurant exists or doesn't exist. And of course, people are wondering what I'm talking about if you live under a rock. This guy named Alan Fong, he put out a tweet basically accusing Chris Sky of dining and dashing at his restaurant. I believe it was $150. I looked up the restaurant, 143. I can't remember if it's Danforth or Broadview. So there's a restaurant there called Allen's. It's not, I believe on Twitter, he says it's Allen's Afro Chinese food or something like that. I can't remember. It just says Allen's. I don't know if it's still open. I didn't call. Didn't have enough time. So if that's the restaurant he dined and ditched at, I'd be interested to know that. We haven't seen security footage. We haven't seen any, I guess what you would say, quote unquote, proof that this actually took place. So really, I mean, this is just an attack on Chris Sky's character, and I'm not going to be the person that defends him. He sunk his own battle. He sunk his own ship during the election. This is what I want to know. So Chris Sky, he's off Twitter now because his account got permanently banned. But apparently, according to him, he said, "How can I dine and ditch? I wasn't even there. I wasn't even in Toronto." So for a guy who claims to spend so much time out of Toronto, how in the fuck was he able to register for the mayoral by-election when he's not? Oh, remember, I don't know if you remember the day that we covered at City Hall. Do you remember that day? So when we left, didn't we run into a bunch of Chris Sky supporters?
Yeah, they were
awaiting his arrival.
I forgot about that. But yeah, they were ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he's coming in on some private plane. They were awaiting his arrival. Like he's some, you know, like they were waiting for the second coming of Jesus Christ. I never supported him. I will continue to not support him. Do I think he dined and dashed? It depends on what version of Chris Sky you believe. Do you believe that he's a dirty grifter who preys on other people? Or do you believe he's some rich kid who believes he's untouchable, so he breaks every rule just to test that theory? He calls himself a freedom fighter, but what is he fighting? Where is he? If he's only on his own media, he's the most censored man in Canada. Nobody wants to hear what he has to say. I call bullshit on that. You know, if he wants to spend his time in the prairies, go ahead, stay there. Ontario don't want you, but
I agree with that sentiment more than anything else. The question of how he could run to be mayor of Toronto, that's not that big of a mystery. As long as he's got an address, he can run. But my thought more is along the lines of, does he even live in Toronto? Does he have an address in Toronto? He probably just used someone else's address. But what's more important to me is the fact that he doesn't seem to have an interest in being in Toronto. So why did you want to run it?
It's the fame and the fortune. I mean, we covered this during the by-election. What, there was like 102 candidates, right?
Yeah.
Of the 102 candidates, just a ballpark figure, how many of those candidates do you think seriously actually gave a shit about Toronto And here's the caveat, because a lot of them gave a shit, even if they weren't serious, but
yeah,
gave a shit about Toronto and were serious about running a serious campaign and not treating it like a sideshow.
I'm going to be generous and I'm going to say 10.
I'm between 10 and 20 because, listen, a lot of people didn't vote for him. I don't know why, but people like Chris Langenfeld, who we once criticized, but I met him and I got to know him. That was my ignorance. So you see, I showed my ass, but I met him and I spoke to him, and he's a great dude. The only problem is he doesn't get the media coverage.
I know I joked about Molly the dog, wanting her to go all the way. But Toby Heaps, like the guy behind that campaign, the owner of Molly the dog, he seems like a genuinely smart guy, you know, like a guy who really would have gone for it. So but it's then, so funny. It's so funny that he decided to do a meme campaign with Molly the dog instead of himself, because he really was very thoughtful.
Yeah, but then you have people who are treating it like a high school reunion.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get together. Oh, you can't say nothing bad about any of us. Yes, but the whole point is it's a race that only one person can win. And if you're not that one person, get the fuck out of the way. Get out of the way. And so I'm going to be more generous and say 10 to 20. I would have to look at the names again and count. Like, I don't. What's that guy? The guy that went crazy and stormed the stage. Sorry, wrong choice of words. The guy that stormed the stage. I don't consider him. He wasn't serious. Kevin something. Even you're drawing a blank.
I am drawing, but I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name. Kevin Clark.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to bring it back to Chris Sky, even though I really just want to stop talking about this guy.
did we ever talk about the fact that he was supposed to come on the show?
Actually, we never discussed it because I didn't want to. You and I made a promise during the by-election. We weren't going to try to influence until we gave our I was guilty of that because I went on a big Blake Acton thing. But we were going to try very hard not to influence the campaign. We'll say that. And I think that's our ability to be fair is what maybe drew all the, shall we say, prominent candidates to come on our show.
Yeah, oh, by the really way, good, didn't we?
I did leave one part out. We were talking about earlier, the guy running for NDP Alberta. He was already endorsed by, you guessed it, your political grandfather, Gil Penalosa.
Oh, no, I saw that. I commented on his thing. I was like, you guys, in my mind, and it's a very shallow statement on my end, but I said, I was like, I feel like you guys have very similar political vibes. And yeah, I do give it to Gil. God, I like Gil. He's a good guy.
And I'll even go as far as to say, if Gil had ended up running in the by-election, I don't think Olivia Chow's the mayor.
You know what? I think you're right. I think the problem being that if he ran, I think he would have split that vote.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. It would have fucked everything up. So quite a selfless task Gil did by not running and basically saying, hey, by the way, Olivia, so good for Gil for at least, you know, not stepping on toes in that way.
Yeah. So I'm just going to briefly read some of these tweets. And by no means are we accusing this. I'm going to say this fucking guy. I don't care. of dining and dashing.
We're not going to accuse this. Excuse the expression. Bastard.
Anyway. So this whole thing started with a guy named Alan Fong. He sent out a tweet on, I think it was March 14th or so. He said, this is Chris Sakosia, who also goes by Chris Sky. He dined and dashed at my restaurant last week. He owes me $150. Pay up, Chris, at CTV Toronto, at Toronto Police, at City News TO, at Virgin Radio TO, at CBC Toronto, hashtag Toronto. It's a really ugly picture of him, too. But anyway.
I don't think he has a good picture.
So, there is another article written last few years ago by a guy named James Hopkin. It was written on April 27th, 2021, and the headline reads, "No food for you, Chris Sky, controversial anti-masking activist turned away by Salt Eatery." Restaurateur Angela Caputo was shocked when a local supporter of controversial anti-mask activist Chris Sakosia, also known as Chris Sky, called up the breakfast pig in hopes of scoring a free breakfast for Sky and three members of his so-called Freedom Convoy, and that's in quotations, for their planned stop in Sault Ste. Marie Wednesday. Sky is leading a convoy that started in British Columbia and is making its way across the country, holding rallies in a number of cities. And this is in quotes, I said, are you asking me to provide him with free food? He's like, yeah. I'm like, why would I do that? And he said, because he is traveling around Canada on his dime. Those were his exact words, fighting for our freedom. And then she goes on, I was honestly shocked, but I just said I'm not a fan of Chris Sky or his antics, so I'm definitely going to turn you down on giving him anything for free. Caputo has since taken to social media to share her distaste for Sky publicly. In quotation, she says, someone like Chris Sky is very dangerous. He's been around thousands of unmasked people in the last month, and now he's coming here. If a bunch of people here are around him, it could potentially spark another outbreak, which is bad for everyone in the community and puts all of us behind. A couple of people on Facebook have said to me, he's fighting for you, but he's not fighting for me as a small business owner. This is putting small business back. If an outbreak happens, we're going to be forced to stay closed for a longer period of time, which is not what we want. Your thoughts?
Matthew, I don't think this restaurant is real.
I'm talking about the Sault Ste. Marie one.
No, I know, but sorry, I'm just...
You're looking up Alan's Afro Sizzling Chinese food or whatever it is. Okay,
because Alan Fong, he added me on Twitter after you told me about the whole thing. He started following me on Twitter.
Yeah, he started following the show as well.
And now and me it's as like well. I'm looking through his profile and I'm like, I think this is fake as hell. But to what end?
So, it gets better. Okay, so I have here, because it was posted. This is an email from Chris Sky to Alan Fong. This was sent, it doesn't have a date on the email, but it says 8:23 a.m. Check this out. This is a contract to Alan Fong for a legal, barehanded, and bare spelled B-E-A-R.
Yeah, it's
bare knuckle fight with Christopher Sakosia. Again, bear is spelled B-E-A-R. Both consenting adults agree to this fight. There can be no charges filed against either combatant. The fight will take place in Toronto, Ontario, at an agreed upon outdoor location. There are no rounds, no clocks, no bells. The fight is over when one person quits or is knocked out. He gives his phone, or I don't know if Chris is actually the one who wrote this, because it says it gives the phone number to contact Chris directly. I think Chris speaks in third person sometime. I saw that in a tweet somewhere.
Yeah.
And he continues, I will be flying to Toronto in a few weeks. Every time I see something about Chris Sky, that's the motto. Oh, I'll be there in a few weeks, or I'm flying there later this week. I'll be in Toronto later this week. He's never in Toronto. Why the fuck was he allowed to run for mayor? Anyway, does anyone at City Hall, they should check social media, honestly. That would get rid of some of the bullshit. Anyway. He goes, I will be flying to Toronto in a few weeks, and the fight will be scheduled upon my arrival. Just like the people that were waiting for him at Nathan Phillips Square the day the election started. If you accept this offer, respond to this email. That is a legal binding fight contract. I await your response. And Alan responds like less than 20, just over 20 minutes later at 8:45 a.m., I, Alan Fong, accept your challenge. See you in a few weeks, pal. Respect that.
Okay.
This story just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
Okay. You know what? Here's the weird thing, okay? This Alan Fong account, and I'm even phrasing it like that. I don't know if this man is real. So he retweets this thing that says, what a fucking loser Chris Sky is. He makes a fake account pretending to be the owner of a restaurant and then claims that he himself, Chris, dined and dashed. Desperate for attention, Chris? Alan retweeted that. Why would you retweet that? And so I say that because if you've seen his profile picture on Twitter, right? Where it's like, it's clearly a face.
It's a cutout head.
Body. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he uses that same picture as of himself as he's like posed at Niagara Falls. I want to see if he says he's there or not. No, it just says timeline cleanser. He doesn't like claim to be there, but it's like, it's just a picture of a waterfall with the same cross arm man and the pasted face on top of it. I don't think he's a real man, Matthew. I think this is just bullshit.
Well, you know, I wanted to bring it up just in case somebody had something to say. And we never clarified our feelings on Chris Sky again. He was supposed to be on our show leading, if not during election season, definitely leading up to it. He didn't take part in the mayoral, the debates that we held. He was invited. He never took part. He's not a serious candidate. I don't know why he portrayed himself. I'll say that, portrayed himself to be serious candidate when he is the opposite of that. He's a joke candidate, and he wasn't the only joke candidate, and all the joke candidates need to get the fuck out of the way and let the real people that give shit about this city, that live in this city, that care about this city, and that are going to live in this city going forward, deal with the problems in the city. As much as I don't like Olivia Chow, she's been here. She's lived here all her life. As much as I may not like her, and that's beside the point. And we can go down the list.
No one's going to pretend that she doesn't have the connection. But anyway. No one's going to pretend that Olivia Chow doesn't have a connection to the city. Even if you don't like her, she is a Toronto stalwart.
Correct. And Brad Bradford came from Hamilton, but whatever.
We won't hold it against him.
So that ends that. Now, before we get to the main event, which Philip will eviscerate the police, I came across an article that I want to read. It is a little long, and I apologize. So stop me if you have any comments. But it's an article that was published in the Central newspaper, which is Durham's premium newspaper. And it is an article written by Pickering City Councilor Lisa Robinson.
Is she the one who's consistently, I want to say consistently in the news for, let's say, bad opinions?
I'm not sure. Let's read. So this is The Frog Boiling Method by Lisa Robinson, Pickering City Councilor. Many people in today's society seem to struggle when confronted with the truth, and this struggle, my friends, is very real. In my own personal experiences, I have had to confront my demons and struggles to gain a deeper understanding of the truth. The whole process was not only intimidating and unsettling at times, but downright frightening and eye-opening, as it forced me to confront uncomfortable truths about what is happening in the world today, and at the same time face my own vulnerabilities. I keep going back to the famous courtroom scene in A Few Good Men from 1992, where Jack Nicholson played the character of Colonel Nathan R. Jessup, and the very moment he was pushed so hard that he yelled out that iconic quote, "You can't handle the truth." Once one can understand how, if you can open yourself up to this kind of pivotal moment, you can start to not only see what everyone else sees, but you will be able to use critical thinking skills and start to think differently. If one would only take the time and allow themselves to realize that perhaps not everything we see or hear that is being pushed on us by celebrities, news media, institutions, governments, and non-governmental institutions, to name a few, is truth, you too may have a transformative experience that allows you to see the truth in a new light, bringing a profound shift in your thinking and understanding. Instead of facing the truth head on, some choose to blindly conform and follow along. I personally link this type of behavior to the frog boiling method, where gradual changes go unnoticed until it is too late. For those who may be unfamiliar with this metaphor, it is about a frog sitting in a cool pot of water thinking everything is okay. As the heat gradually increases, the frog does not take notice until it is too late and he's being cooked in a pot of boiling water. This metaphor highlights the dangers of complacency and the importance of using critical thinking skills to become aware of subtle changes in our surroundings and circumstances. One should always seek to educate themselves by adopting a behavior in which to also seek alternative sources of information, not only to consider different viewpoints, but to weigh evidence and form a well-rounded opinion based on a more comprehensive understanding of the topic at large. Rather than taking the time to listen to what others have to say and participating in open, honest dialogue or debate, some individuals are quick to jump in that cool pot of water filled with criticism, insult, name-calling, and labeling one as a bigot, racist, transphobe, without taking a critical, well-needed moment to research or participate to see what is the truth. Calling one a conspiracy theorist or deeming the information as misinformation without truly understanding the intentions of the speaker has become an alarming trend driven by the desire to push personal agendas and discredit others. You good so far?
Well, if we're pausing for a moment, I would like to tell you something I think is very funny, which is, while you were speaking, I was Googling Lisa Robinson to make sure it was the person I thought it was.
Okay.
The first thing that came up before even the fact that it is in fact, this is the Pickering city councilor. It brought up a CBC story about conservative dump Toronto candidate over Islamophobic tweets. That's Lisa Robinson. In 2021, she was the conservative candidate for Beaches East York in Toronto. So I've got to tell you, having discovered this, I'm annoyed that she ran for political power in Toronto. And what, you live in Pickering? Or did you just move to Pickering to get elected in Pickering? You suck, Lisa Robinson.
Well, that's enough of that. We're not going to finish that article. I didn't know what you just told me. I had no idea.
I know. I just learned that now. So I'm saying, like, oh man, oh, she sucks.
I would be interested to see what she said, because the point is, like, again, and I'm not defending her, but what do you consider Islamophobic? It's the same. It goes across the board. What do you consider transphobic? What do you consider anti-Semitic? What do you consider racist? And fill in the blank. What is the universal definition? Because we all have different things that we are offended by. And I'm going to share a personal one. I think I've shared this before.
Before you begin.
But I'm going to tell it again. Go ahead.
Before you begin, I don't disagree with the point you're saying, that I think there are lines that some people don't understand or whatever. I'm just going to go based on a history, a pattern of behavior, that Lisa Robinson is not the kind of person who gets to make those points.
No, I completely agree with you. But what I want to know is, what were the words that she said?
Fair enough. And as you're right, I am at this moment only seeing headlines. I've not delved deep into these articles. Because that'd be rude. You're talking to me.
So I'll just tell one quick story and then we'll move on, unless you have something else to add. So I think I've told this story before. I think it was to you, but it was maybe a year ago or something like that. Have you ever heard me talk about the term designer baby?
I don't think I have.
Maybe it was on my other show. Because we did a lot of political stuff for the 2022 election. So a designer baby is the term used for a white family raising a non-white child. And I didn't know about this term until I found myself in this situation. My son, as I've said in the past, he's adopted. He is not white. We don't love him any less. It's, you know, he's funny as shit, actually.
Matthew, I want to make jokes, but I'm like, that would be insensitive because this is like your life. So I can't.
It's okay. So I got to get used to not saying wife anymore. one of his mom's friends, they used to hang, they don't hang out as much anymore, but used to hang out. And when we got my son, got like, he was delivered by a fucking, what are those birds that deliver children?
Storks. Oh my God.
So when we adopted him right from the hospital from day one.
Oh, wow.
She said, "Oh, now you have your designer baby."
Who said that?
His mom's friend.
Oh my God, that's disgusting.
Yes. So again, we all have different levels of what offends us. And if we could, as a society, come up with a universal definition of what is racist, what is homophobic, what is transphobic, what is Islamophobic, what is anti-Semitic? Go on, I'm listening.
I want to push back only because I'm like, Matthew, I understand the point that you're saying right now, but your sickly little story, I'm like, that is just racist. It's not like we have to like interpret,
You mean my personal story or? Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It was racist.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't think that's a great example of, you know,
but how many people, but my question to you is, how many people know about that term? Designer.
Well, I mean, clearly I didn't.
Anyway, we're a little short on time, so let's get to the main event. Let's talk about the police. I know that you want to. There's a couple things that I wanted to cover. And let me just log into my iPad. So there is a tweet from a guy. I'm just going to look it up. Bear with me for a second. There's a tweet from a guy named... it's not on this phone.
You have too many phones.
I really do. I have two phones here and an iPad. Okay. I don't have it on here either. Okay, so Okay, well, I can't read the direct tweets because I can't find them right now. But there was a tweet from a guy named Paul Mitchell about a police statement to leave key fobs at the front door. So take me. Let's start at that point. Was that a media conference? Was that a town hall meeting, a public gathering? And that cop made that stupid statement.
My understanding was that it was
statement. A town hall. Yeah. So can you? Did you? Do you have a? Like even what could resemble a brief quote of exactly what the police officer said.
You know what? If anyone, it should be me because I've been enjoying this stupid chorus of my whole thing on this entire story is simply this couldn't have come. This story couldn't have come out at a better time. Okay. Olivia Chow just gives them the requested final bit of their budget. And this is like the first major thing we hear from the Toronto police after that. It's to simply leave your keys at the front door. Now, I understand their logic. Of course, the logic being, you know, the people who are stealing the cars, if they're coming into your home, they're not really looking for valuables inside the home. They're just looking for the car. So if you make it as easy as possible, you're not going to get hurt. That's not your job. I think we expect the police, especially with a budget of over $1 billion now, I think we expect a little bit more from our police department. But we keep not getting more from our police department. We keep getting nothing.
Absolutely. And then there was another. So basically, I mean, let's talk about that. They want us. Okay, you don't drive, so it doesn't affect you. But let's for fun. Not for fun, but I drive.
It's all for fun.
So they want me to leave my key fob at the front door in hopes that someone breaks in the house, they're going to take the key fob and go, hey, we're in the house and we have the key fob for the car, but let's not try to steal anything else in the car.
Yeah, that does seem very silly, right? Especially considering that getaway vehicle can now take all those things that they could steal.
Exactly. When I'm sure you've seen it in all the old movies and TV shows, a character comes through the door. What's the first thing that they do? They either put their keys down on the... There's a little table by the door, or there's a key hook, and you put the key on the key hook. I'm sure you've seen these shows, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so I had a tweet from Diane Chan McNally basically saying the same thing. How could you, like, especially since... You launched a campaign, I believe it started in November, right? You were just talking about it. They launched a campaign to get all the money that they were asking for, $20 million.
Yep.
Such a nice, even amount. Eh? They couldn't go, oh, we need $20,958,003. No, it had just give us $20 million, we'll be good. And Olivia Chow didn't want to do it. It gave only part of it. And then ended up caving, giving the whole thing. Still not enough. Make our job easier, guys. Can you put your key fobs at the front door so that, you know, we don't have to, they could just take the car because they're not going to try to kill you or rape you or steal all your shit or whatever. I'm sorry to get dark. But I mean, once somebody has access to your house, they can literally do anything they wanted. It's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
This police officer should be fired, and the entire police force next year should be held. I would like to see this is not going to happen.
No.
But I challenge, and I'm going to write an email actually. I challenge Olivia Chow to direct, if it's not her on the board, whoever she has in her place on the board, to conduct a line-by-line review of the police budget spending and become more involved in that process to the point where you're cutting the fucking budget, cutting the waste. You wonder why the fuck we can't stop any criminals. Forget if they're going after people's personal safety or their personal possessions. The crime is happening. That is the point. And the reason you can't stop it is because you have 540 officers for a city that has 3 million people. You and I don't agree on this. We agree on cutting the budget, but I want to cut the budget so I can add more police officers. Because in a Mayor King's government, the very first thing I would do once I have all that extra money from cutting the budget is double the police force. People say, oh, that's not realistic, Matthew. Says who? Show me where it's not realistic. Show me if I have the savings from cutting the ass out of the budget where I can't hire the police officers and double the force. And then maybe you'll see shit's going to get done and we won't have stupid cops saying, hey, leave the fobs at the door. Your thoughts?
You know what? It reminds me that I did want to bring up, not too much detail, but there was a video that came out from a Winnipeg Police Board meeting. And there's a woman there speaking to the board to talk about how there were 9 citizens murdered by the Winnipeg police. And their response was to say that that comment was not in decorum. And to shut her down completely. And I wonder what the value of a police board is that simply says, you're doing everything right. What is the value of a board that only tells you what you're doing is correct? And the fact that, and I think I probably stated before that I think that I thought it was a good thing that Olivia Chow didn't sit on our police board. I changed my position. Why is she not on that police board to be a voice for accountability?
I couldn't agree more with you. And just before we go, that lady that got hit by the car, the cop car, we talked about it, and I'm drawing a complete blank, but I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, that also happened, I think, immediately after their budget increase. And it's like, we've all been, how can you talk about public safety and other people's driving if police are supposed to be held to a higher standard? I think that's what drives me crazy when people give excuses to the police. You are supposed to be driving better than us. You're supposed to be acting better than us. Why are you being stupid?
And with that, I think we're going to leave it there. Phil and I want to thank everyone for your continued support and for listening to us. We strive every 2 weeks to bring this to you. Soon we're going to roll it out weekly again. But for now, this is what we got. Thank you again, guys, for listening. And we will see you guys next week with brand new content.
And welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't bitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.